Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. And here is your host, Ryan Mack.
Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack. Now, data is extremely abundant, and we create millions of data points each and every day. But sitting in a pool, data does not provide the value that the payments industry needs. So one of the questions becomes is how can merchant acquirers and ISOs take advantage of this abundant amount of data, and how can they capitalize and add value to their clients?
So to unpack this, I'm joined by Ron Tyker,
who is the founder of Eversea, and Don Apgar, who is the director of the Merchant Services Advisory Practice at Mercator Advisor Group. So there's certainly a lot of insights to unpack on today's episode. So without any further delays, let's start the show. So Ron and Don, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on this episode. Now, to get things started, Ron, I want to start with you, and maybe you could kind of unpack from your perspective, you know, some of maybe the macro trends that you're seeing from Eversea's perspective, really as it pertains to this online payments ecosystem that we've really seen have tremendous growth, particularly over the last 18 months.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, you know, obviously one of the things that is very, very clear in kind of walking around the expo, you can see a lot of companies taking advantage of the data availability. Because our lives are moving to the online and people are sharing their information, organizations are sharing the information at an amazing, you know, volume. Coupled with the fact that you now have technologies that are able to actually synthesize this amount of data and kind of make super incredible insights out of it, that's one of the things that we're seeing. There's a lot of pluses and minuses to that. The one notable minus is that there's so much data, right? You get everybody who's dealing with underwriting is getting overloaded with data. So if you don't have the capacity to process this amount of data, it's going to be very easy for the bad actors to kind of hide inside this endless amount of data. The plus side is obviously is that if you do have the power to kind of synthesize this data, then the visibility that you're able to get today is, you know, supersedes, you know, everything that we were able to see in the past. And that would help in all sorts of different ways in terms of business enablement, fighting crime and fraud and so on. So I would say that's one very notable trend that we're seeing today.
Yeah, it's very true. You know, it's been said that the data is the new oil, and everything's about the data. Let's capture the data. Let's catalog the data. And we've gone beyond the data warehouse, you know, which is kind of like the inventory of data, to the data lake, which is just throw everything in a pile. And I think that a lot of folks are struggling with which data is important, you know, and you're exactly right. You get too much and you get clogged up. And if you're not looking at the right things because you've got too much data, it's almost as bad as having no data at all, right?
Yeah, I certainly find it very interesting the amount of discussions around data that we've been having here at Money 2020. You know, I really do find it interesting kind of the evolution of this conversation, right? Because I think when you take a look at the payments ecosystem as a whole, you know, a while ago we were having conversations mainly just around the payment component of it, and then it became around the data collection aspect of it, and kind of the really big portions of that conversations were like, hey, you know, your data pool, your data lake, your data, you know, insert body of water here type of discussions. And now really where I'm seeing the evolution of that conversation go towards is the insights and actionable items around that data that no longer is it enough to say, hey, we collect data, but it is the actionable insights that gather around it or that organizations are being able to provide their clients with. So with that kind of being, said here, Ron, I'd love to get your take then. How is it that your organization, Eversea, is then really providing your clients with those actionable insights with the data that it's able to collect?
Yeah, so exactly. So, you know, once you're starting to rely on the data, for making crucial decisions on things like, you know, what merchant am I going to allow to process through me, and so on. If something goes wrong with your data integrity, then that's going to create a whole lot of serious operational problems. And so data integrity, it has always been, but obviously, as we just discussed, more so today, is critical for the smooth operation of these businesses. So with Eversy, what we're doing is, A, we're trying to take advantage of the immense knowledge that exists on the internet. We have the capability, we developed the capability to basically collect everything that exists on the internet. We're talking about over 650 million top-level domains. We're talking about billions of domains. This is a whole lot of data. The first challenge is, how do you do that? How are you able to collect everything? How you're storing everything? And most importantly, how do you keep it up to date? These are some very significant challenges that we've been investing a lot in over the years. And then is how do you make sense of all this data? It's endless amounts of endless data. The second effort that we develop is a classification capability. So taking advantage of today's AI capabilities, machine learning. So think about, it's always hard to think about, think about a robot, right? Looking at the screen of your laptop, and like this endless amount of websites are coming on, and the robot says, oh, it's a flower shop or it's a shoe store. And regardless of, the country or the language, or having that ability is huge, machine learning and AI effort, and could only be possible with the advancement of today's AI and machine learning capabilities. And then, once you collect everything, you know what everything is, we're trying to also identify important pieces of data inside of all of these different sites that will allow us to make sure that the information that we're eventually synthesizing and providing to the end customers is such that we are sure that we will, we'll provide the insights that are needed and are very, very reliable. In case we have doubts about what we're about to provide, we won't provide it. So the information provided is only the one that went through endless amount of like filters and controls to make sure that is actionable to the end user.
That's really cool, Ron. In fact, I was going to ask you about that, whether you had any adaptive learning capabilities, because, as it's one thing to sift through the data pile, if you will, and say, okay, well, A, B, and C are the attributes that are valuable for us. But then in this constantly evolving world, you could get to a point where, A, B, and C are not as relevant today as, let's say, D, E, and F, right? And having the ability to kind of identify that and adapt your metrics on the fly is absolutely key, right?
Absolutely. It's a problem that's true for any big data or machine learning topic. But if you think about being able to create, what we call an automatic feedback loop, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That where the machine, learns to correct its own mistakes, right. And identification of the data, I'm oversimplifying, right? But what is a bad merchant, right? Yeah. And, since this is an never stopping process, you can get to a point where it's almost fail proof, like it's not gonna make a mistake, which is scary a little bit, because then now we're going to more philosophical questions around AI, which is a little bit off topic, but once you're getting these controls in place, we're starting to rely on them almost completely because they're so accurate. Then what happens if it makes a mistake, right? But that's a completely different.
Well, it's really interesting, you know, because if you look at the way that risk is managed, especially in payments, you know, in the analog world, it's okay, we're going to develop a policy, and then we have a policy to check the policy every X number of months, right, to make sure that it's still in line. But, you know, in today's digital world, even checking your risk policy every 6 months, it's too long. You know, you're way behind the curve, and the only way to keep up with it is to do it dynamically the way you guys are doing it.
And this is an interesting point too, because we see a lot of the organizations today rely on data that comes from what we call offline databases. There's a lot of great companies that have been doing this for years. And the value that they're providing is by being able to aggregate endless amount of data from what we call these offline databases. So the registries, and this exactly right, because these databases take long time to update, right? And so what we're seeing also is that oftentimes, organizations that rely on these insights from these companies who aggregate these offline databases, because of the lag of the freshness of the data, that would make bad, you know, choices, or make their choices based on not so accurate data. And so that's where adding information from the biggest, the most dynamic database in the world, which is the internet, to supplement these data points that you're getting from the traditional sources, I think is crucial in today's world, just to make sure that you have the freshness of the information on which you're basing your decision on.
Yeah, what does that do to your processing, like overhead, if you will? I mean, do you continually have to expand capacity in the cloud to manage all the? Because as the robot gets smarter, it's digesting more and more data. Does that grow? Does your Amazon bill grow every month? Your AWS bill?
Yeah. You know what? It's a very good question. Yes, but then you have to be smart, right? With how you synthesize the data and where you're focusing your efforts, right? And so, like everything else, obviously there's constant growth of data or constant areas of interest. There are ways to kind of handle it with our partners, trying to understand their focus areas and make sure that we're focusing on what's important to them, and basically operating through market demand, and that would help to address that.
Because that's got to be a big challenge for your business. I mean, you get smarter and smarter, but you don't want it to get more and more expensive at the same time, right?
Exactly. So you have to be very diligent on where you're focusing the effort. Absolutely, that's a very fair point.
Certainly very interesting there. Now, Ron, at the start of this conversation, we were discussing, you know, a lot of macro trends within the payments ecosystem. But as we know, the payments ecosystem is certainly very nuanced. So let's hone in this lens quite a bit here. And maybe you could kind of unpack some of the micro trends that you're seeing from your organization's perspective.
Well, I think there's some talk about gaming industry, just because it's one of these industries where the regulation is very different from one place to the other, on one hand. Second hand is the fact that it's very appealing, obviously, to a lot of people. But the regulators across different territories treated differently. And so what you're having is a situation where, while it's a very... it's a product or an industry that appeals to a lot of people. The regulator in different countries may impose some restrictions on being to operate in it, and business people that try to engage in this line of business may try to overcome some of these restrictions by, you know, creating entities elsewhere and kind of having it both ways, kind of, you know, trying to, on the one hand, not get in front of the regulator. On the other hand, enjoy, you know, the fruits of the business. And so this, but it's more apparent maybe in the gaming industry, but we're seeing it across the board in every type of industry might be considered a little bit more high risk. Taking advantage of, again, going back to online and internet, doing these type of workarounds routing transaction from somewhere else and so on, became much easier in an online environment.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, what's interesting is gaming. You know, we've always talked about gaming as casinos and regulated gambling and things like that, but now gaming includes video gaming.
Right.
And, we were just talking yesterday about how much money moves inside of video games, and the KYC requirements that go along with that, because a lot of the players are minors, right? So being able to determine who's of age and eligible to receive and send money, and you know where it's coming and where it's going, and that's going to be a whole other challenge outside of the regulatory environment for casinos and such.
Absolutely, and the fact that there's a lot of money, or what we call in-game money. It turns these games into like a platform.
Yes.
Where yes. Could potentially, and we've seen that happen, be used or exploited to illegally move money. Mm-hmm. It's super easy to do. So a lot of talking about fast-paced, changing industry. This is something you didn't experience in the past, and now it's creating this whole new problem. And if somebody wants to take advantage of it, and oftentimes people are looking for these holes, we'll see them way before, like the regulators and everybody else. They're definitely exploiting it.
Now, Ron, if I could, I want to bring in a question here around the recent uncoverings of the Pandora Papers, because I certainly think that you would be a perfect individual to be able to answer questions around this, or kind of taking a look at what this exposed as a whole. So maybe let's start there. You know, taking a look at the Pandora Papers, what is really kind of all the information and all the headlines that are coming out really speak to you about?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Pandora case is, again, it's an illustration of what, you know, people are trying to do in order to hide their assets. And the way they go about it is by, you know, setting up like offshores, companies and entities and so on. The problem is that everything that was uncovered in this story was predominantly done in what we like the old way. If somebody wanted to do that today, it's going to be so much easier to do. Now, most of these people are high profile figures, and I think as far as I read, you know, I don't think there's a whole lot of like illegal. It's mostly like, I don't want this to be upfront and nobody like knows, even though some of those are like government official, which ethics mandate that they will expose their assets and so on. But the fact that the magnitude of this phenomenon, you know, was exposed. If these people are using it, the really bad people are doing it too, and what's scarier is that, again, the ease of, or the ability to do that today is so much greater. And you know, that's a scary thing, because what it means ultimately is that us as an industry, as a regulator, as a society, will have far less visibility into these criminal activities and how they're enjoying their criminal money.
Yeah, and that was what led to the underwriting requirements on merchant accounts, was getting back to the beneficial owners, because you gather information on the principals, but it turns out the principals are you know, straw men, you know, for, you know, people that you don't want to know who owns the business, kind of a thing, you know.
Yeah, and then these straw men in the past, you know, would probably have to be like real people. Today, you can make them up. So that's even another layer of difficulty on like getting to that visibility.
Now, before we wrap things up, you know, I want to talk on the technology aspect of it here. Now, it's certainly been extremely highlighted, I would certainly say, over the past 18 months of how technology has rapidly evolved the payments ecosystem. But Ron, let's stay within kind of your organization's wheelhouse here. Maybe you could kind of unpack for our audience, really from your perspective, what the trends that you're seeing and how technology is really being utilized to fight financial crime.
Yeah, so, you know, we kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, but you know, we see the internet as this. You could look at it as almost like this gigantic, I like to call it like a crime board, right? Like you know how with the crime boards you have all the evidences, you know, you pull the strings between the different evidences. What we're saying is that on the internet, all the lines are already drawn. And if you have the ability to see them, then you have, you know, have an ability to really expose a lot of risk that wouldn't be known otherwise. And so what we're doing is developing this core technology that allows us to do that, to really see all these connections between all the different entities that exist on the internet, and by doing so, understanding who are your friends, right, that would not be necessarily known, where do you actually operate from, you know, what exactly is it that you do? Very, very basic KYC questions that really got really, really hard to answer when everything was starting to move online.
No, that's a really good analogy, because, you know, if you tried to draw or make a physical crime board like we see on TV of the internet, it's too much data. You couldn't physically do it, you know, and it's only with the power of the bot and the machine learning that has the computing power to understand all those relationships and distill them down, you know, into the salient points that we as humans can visualize on something like a crime board, right? You know, and try to sift through a lot of the background noise to separate the signal from the noise, right?
That's a fantastic point, because, and we're demonstrating in some cases, we're showing, you know, here's one merchant that we were asked by a top, you know, bank to kind of analyze. And then what we're showing is that endless amount of data that we were able to pull that is associated with that merchant. And so a person, you know, it's going to take forever to go through all this amount of data. And so, and when you're talking about hundreds of thousands or millions of merchants, there's no way that people will be able to do that. And so if you want to be able to do that, you have to apply these new technologies, new capabilities to allow you to sift through the data. Absolutely. Correct.
You know, that's, you know, talking about a crime board, it's not that the stuff is necessarily illegal, right? Because if a bank, as in your examples, wants to look at a specific merchant, it's not because of illegalities, but things that might be detrimental to the bank's opinion of that merchant, right? That affects how they categorize the risk for that merchant, right?
Yeah, I mean, and that categorization is another big thing, you know, with the way that people are being onboarded today, the banks don't have the slightest idea what the merchant is doing, which is crazy, which is like the most basic piece of information, right, of what is the merchant doing. And again, because of the quantity, so if you're onboarding 10,000 merchants a day and they're coming through like a web portal and they're just putting in, keying in whatever they want, right, how do you manage a risk as a financial institution. How do you do that?
Well, that's the thing. And I mean, everybody's expecting this frictionless Amazon-like experience, right? So, you know, you don't want to ask for too much information, but you have to get enough information, because that's what the biggest risk is, you know, specifically in the merchant business today, is not fraudulent transactions, but fraudulent merchants, you know, like no such company kind of a thing.
Well, Ron and Don, thank you so much for taking the time for speaking with me today. And I hope to have you both back on the podcast real soon.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan.